Welcome to another episode of Working with Purpose. Our show's dedicated to exploring topics around the intersection of faith and business and viewing leadership through the lens of the body of Christ. I'm David Stark. I'm a management consultant and author. I'm joined by Justin Royer, a strategist and a service designer, and he's my co-host. We're glad you're joined us today, and we're doing a new series called Trends, Disruptions, Frontiers, and Hacks. This series will continue to advance a new image of leadership that's based on the metaphor of the agile human body, instead of the master image of a rigid machine. I'd also let you know that you can join this conversation online anytime at davidstarkcollective.com. You can find us on Twitter at Stark Collective. We've got a new LinkedIn group we'd love for you to join. It's called Business Connected. You can also listen to all of our podcasts and leave us reviews on iTunes. Those reviews are really helpful for our marketing. That is, if they're good ones. So we'd love to have you do that. But Justin, today I want to talk about an opening story for a moment. I want you to pretend that it's October 15th of 2016. Okay. And at this point in the election cycle, almost everybody was pointing to Hillary Clinton winning over Donald Trump, right? I mean, just about everybody. I remember maps being displayed on CNN and all the different deals he does on there and why he's going to get this number of votes or that number of votes, right? And they said there's almost no possibility that he can put a winning combination together. We all remember that. And I also remember after all of that happened, I remember listening to the first results. And the first results I heard, I think, was from Kentucky or Missouri, one of those. And the first result, very few percentage in, but it basically said, Trump's doing a whole lot better than we thought he would in whatever state that was. And I said to myself, he's going to take the whole thing. I just had that intuitive sense at that point. And my point is not to talk about Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. My point is how off all of this political prediction was. Right, all these points of data, massive amounts of algorithm work and stuff being put in there. And that's exactly what we want to talk about today, is how could that happen? And what does that have to do with adaptability?
It's the opening story, Dave, that you just told is a pretty interesting one. I think that was on the minds of a lot of people, right? Mm-hmm. Regardless of where you're at on the political spectrum. But what I think about that from a data standpoint is that all of the models that people were using, and there are a lot of different models that were all kind of pointing basically in the same direction, but they were highly precise models that were, in this case, very inaccurate,
yes.
Right? So very, very precise, but not accurate. And there's a lot of things that you can take away from that. But one of the things that I'm excited to unpack on the show gets to the heart of your story, which is, you know, we tend to really value numbers, and we treat that at numbers as the empirical source of the only truth out there, right? And there's actually a term for that, and it's logical positivism. It's this kind of philosophy that is really just, it values empiricism, numbers, that things that are extremely factual as the only source of truth. The quantitative rules in all areas over the qualitative, if you will.
Yes.
And so in this show, what we're going to do is we're going to unpack how we believe that you need to have a balance here. It can't just be the models and the empiricism coming true. You have to overlay that with human judgment. And I'm excited for the show. So let's keep this thing going.
So we want to thank an author. He wrote a book called Sense Making. His name is Christian Madsberg. And basically, this is we've been doing the adaptability series, and we talked about the give and take of the sensing system the last couple of weeks. And all that is about this kind of data or stuff coming in. But this is the opposite extreme. This really talks about where does the human side of this come in. And his point today is that the overfocus, like you just said, on STEM-based knowledge, science, technology, engineering, and math, the problem is that we're actually dealing with a lot of things that it can possibly devalue human inferences and judgment at a great cost. He says the problem with that is that we only see numbers and models. They're only representations of the world. They're not the actual world itself, and we have a danger of missing the human factor completely if we just use that.
Yeah, and we've talked about this in past shows too, and it's this this analysis and synthesis that need to happen together. And what I mean by that is analysis really takes a look at the things that have happened, right? This is the data and the rear view mirror model. The synthesis is putting new things together. And I think of a very recent interaction I had with a client as a good example of this, Dave. Mm-hmm. But we're wrapping up a really fun project with a client.
Yep.
And I'm sitting at the table with my colleagues across the table from the client, and we're in our final presentation, mm-hmm. right, as clients. So, you know, all the C-suite is there, and we've got the PowerPoint going and all that jazz. And we get introduced by our main client as, you know, here are the smart consultants that have been helping us, and they've looked at a bunch of data and done a bunch of research, and here's what they found. And she was correct, Dave, in that we were smart consultants. We did a bunch of data, you know, a bunch of research. We did look at a bunch of data. But yeah. What she left out on that, I think, is important in that we didn't just look backwards and look at the way that the way that the world is for that business. We didn't just look at data or just do research. You know, we also used our imagination to envision what the future could be.
You bet.
So we took inferences from their data and from that research and did something with it. But I think, again, it goes back to this logical positivism thing. Most people really value kind of the hard data stuff, the research piece, but they don't value the imagination piece and the creativity of making the future happen.
Yes.
And that's, to me, that's sad, but it's also an opportunity to bring these worlds together.
Absolutely. And we'll talk a lot more about that. And I think what I kept hearing on the media channels when they were debriefing it was, we had all this data, but we were not in touch with what was going on the ground,
mm-hmm.
right? And our author kind of puts it this way. He says, compared to all the endless information that's accessible through big data, what value is there in the human-led inquiry, they ask? Well, what value is there in actually reading a few books or having some kind of human-led cultural inquiry along the way? And what he wants to argue big and loud is there's great value in that kind of knowledge. Otherwise, we lose a sensitivity, the human sensitivities, and we'll talk about those, and everything gets reduced to models, numbers, et cetera, right? So, and in his consulting, many top leaders have lost touch with the humanity of their customers, right? What is it? They get models and representations and data, but what's actually happening when they use our stuff? In fact, his whole point is that many times don't even use the stuff they're selling, and they wonder why they can be an expert about that, right? So what are we talking about? We're talking about three sensitivities. We're talking about imagination, not random selection. We're talking about intuition, and we're talking about empathy and care. And it's interesting, the CEO of Procter & Gamble and other CEOs have basically said, I want people to pursue degrees in liberal arts, because in liberal arts, they get in touch with humanities and languages. They begin to develop an idea about a constantly changing environment. That's one of the keys here, is that you can't know everything in a constantly changing environment, which we've talked about many times in a VUCA world. You've got to be able to use these kinds of sensitivities to actually know enough that you can actually respond into those environments.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that is related to that, do you watch Shark Tank, Dave?
Yes, I do, once in a while.
It's a fun show. If you don't watch it, I think it's usually syndicated on Friday evenings or something. For the people that don't have a nightlife like myself, and maybe you, Dave. You probably do. I know I don't. But it's a great show. It's all about entrepreneurs, right? That come on the show, and the sharks are the panel of investors that all basically listen to their pitch and then poke holes in it and then maybe offer them a deal to help invest, et cetera. But anyway, Mark Cuban is one of those. He also owns the Dallas Mavericks, and I mean he's a big time entrepreneur in his own right. He was on record saying this recently, and I'll just read it to you because it goes right to the point you just made. But he says, I personally think there's going to be a greater demand in 10 years for liberal arts majors than there were for programming majors and maybe even engineering, because when the data is all being spit out for you, options are also being spit out for you. You need a different perspective in order to have a different view of the data. And so having someone who is more of a free thinker, yada, 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 he goes on and on there. But again, this is the point in that he's saying the value that will be created in the future is going to be by people that can understand data, but then synthesize it and use imagination to make it valuable and helpful.
You bet.
So I think that's the same deal.
And so we basically are talking about the siren song, if you will, mm-hmm. of AI and machine learning. And it's really important, but it's got to be counterbalanced is our point here. And the author puts it this way. Says one of the reasons the author contends that this other kind of data is so important is because connectivity and interdependency, the themes on our shows, put so many systems in our current world together. In other words, never before has our culture been so seduced by the promises of artificial intelligence, machine learning, and cognitive computing. But also, never before has our world been overlapping political, financial, social, technical, environmental systems. They're all linked together now, okay? And so we would be, we're quick to say you definitely need all those things that the algorithms can create for us. But alongside of that, to be adaptive as an organization, you also need this very different type of data, because the interconnections of stuff means you're not going to be able to predict exactly what's around the corner, which we've talked about a lot. Therefore, adaptability depends upon having some sense of this other way of being, of information.
And again, just to underscore that point, I mean, machine learning, you know, part of AI, is really good at predicting an outcome where the future looks a lot like the past.
Yes.
And again, what we're saying, in a VUCA world, when you have a lot of instability and variability and change in the future, it becomes less and less potential. That doesn't mean it's not valuable, because, you know, on the way to this show, I was listening to a machine learning podcast, like I told you. It's really good stuff. But nevertheless, back on with the show, Dave.
Yeah, let's go. Now, there's five critical principles that he brings out in sense making that are important as this counterbalance, right? And so, but before we get to those areas, you know, we have to say this, because he loves this. He says, philosophy is our greatest intellectual tool for analyzing deep held cultural beliefs. That's Heidegger. Actually, we won't go into Heidegger right now. But anyway, what he's talking about here is that basically all information has a context. And therefore, if you analyze and objectively stand distant from it, you're not immersed in the real thing. You've got facsimiles of it, but you don't have the real thing, where you're actually, your subjectivity becomes really important there. So therefore, in our context, we need to know what the cultural assumptions are. We know, tell us why they do what they do. That, you know, algorithms can't tell us that. Thirdly, from the philosophy of science, nothing exists in a vacuum. This is an ecological thing. In other words, that is in context of that, which is in context of that. The example he gives, for example, is let's say you were looking at eyeliner, but eyeliner stands in the context of lipstick and makeup and doing your hair and looking nice because you're going out on a date. All that stuff has to do with going out on a date, but you don't get that context by doing all the individual things together. So we're going to look at those five areas after we come back from the break.
Sounds good. Well, folks, the first half of the show has been flying by. We'll be back with you here in a few, in another minute. We're going to be discussing the five critical areas of sense making. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David Stark and Justin Royer. Be right back.
You're listening to Working with Purpose, a program dedicated to exploring topics around the intersection of faith and business, and viewing leadership through the lens of the body of Christ. We'll get back to more in a moment. First, I want to remind you of the opportunity to dialogue with David and Justin on these important topics. You can join the conversation, sign up to receive blog posts, get updates on upcoming events and offerings, and more through their website, davidstarkcollective.com. That's davidstarkcollective.com. Or find them on Twitter, at Stark Collective. David and Justin are also available to speak on a variety of topics related to working with purpose, and will help you go beyond discussing these concepts to putting them into action. They team up together to advise and consult with businesses, organizations, and ministries. Find out more by going to davidstarkcollective.com and opening either the speaking or consulting pages of the platform. Now, let's get back to part two of Working with Purpose.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David Stark and Justin Royer. Please join us in the conversation at davidstarkcollective.com. You can find us on Twitter at Stark Collective. You can also listen to our podcasts or review it on iTunes. Remember, you can also join a LinkedIn Business Connected. We'd love to have you there. Let's jump back in here. We're doing our third program on adaptability, and we're really looking at what we call sense making, and it's a completely different kind of data than algorithms and, you know, machine learning and cognitive stuff that's really needed to be adaptable as an organization. And before the break, we talked about there's really five critical principles that help you balance all of the data that's coming in from algorithms or logical kinds of places, right? So, and so let's start with the first one. His way of putting it is this, that in this kind of knowledge, it's culture and not just individuals. And so what he means by that point is this. He says when you talk about focus groups and service and surveys, for example, like companies or political campaigns understand marketing your voters. He says in a focus group or survey, they keep people out of their context of their regular lives and pepper them with questions about discrete ideas, products, or policies. The problem is you just decontextualize experience. They're not in their real worlds. They're now in a false world where you've set up the questions, right? So you're pulling words apart and attempt to create an assembly of facts. But that almost misses everything that sheds light on human behavior itself in its context, right? So his major point here is that people say they do things or choices of the moment, their preferences on a survey or logic may have nothing to do with their actual behavior. So they may be very different when they actually, we've seen this over and over again, right? So in the cultural context, it's the understand of meaning. In other words, when you bring culture in, and it's not just individuals, you're talking about we're all embedded in cultures. And that really affects how we make decisions, our choices that we look at, et cetera, how they influence us, the history behind the situation, everything that happens there. And so that's where you really look at what people actually end up doing. And that requires an understanding of story, of cultural texture in every situation. So I remember I was talking to a woman outside the church, and I was just talking about the gospel and why she wasn't a Christian or, why she left the church. And after all, she said that. But she says, Dave, that's why I left the church, but that's not why I'm not a Christian. So I realized all my questions in fact gathering didn't get at the core of what I was really trying to get at. It's the same thing.
Because you were asking about lipstick.
Yeah, there you go. That's it. Not getting a date. So let's do a second one. Thick data and not just thin analytical data. That's his second point. The author's point about thick data is that business is almost always making bets on human behavior. Consequently, thick data sounds like this. You know as a person when the coffee is too cold or how it feels just before a thunderstorm. You know when something is wrong when you look at a partner's eyes. It's the background upon which we deal with our lives every day. In other words, these are all different kinds of information that you'll never get in a logic chain. This type of knowledge is not banal fact, however. It's the very way that we deal with the world. All these kinds of inputs are help us make our decisions, what we're actually going to do, right? So in how we choose these things in the supermarket, how we cook, how we read each other, how we chop down a tree, unfortunately, this is ignored in many organizations because it's not considered rigorous, right? We can't objectify it, put numbers to it. But the reality is our lives are dominated with thick data all the time in our lives. In the business context, the misunderstanding of people can have disastrous results. After all, business is almost always making bets on this human behavior. Which product is they more likely to buy? Which employees are most likely to exceed? What price a customer is willing to pay? And so on and on. That thick context, which is what happens when you do this kind of data gathering that he's suggesting, just gives a better point of view. So first 2 points. Third point is this. I love this. Behavior on the savannah and not in the zoo, right? And what he's saying is that this is a philosophical school called phenomenology, just in case you wanted to know, the study of human experiences. With phenomenology, you're observing behavior in its actual social context. Right. So in other words, you're on the savannah with the lions. You're not trying to look at them in the zoo, right? Because you're not going to see real natural behavior in the zoo, are you? So it's always helpful to interview actual customers or see them what they are in their real life situation. And when you do that, then you all of a sudden have a sense of what's really going on out in their real worlds. And that's never going to be captured by abstract data or even models. Right. Along the way. So
as a designer, Dave, this is the first trick in my toolbox, right? This is the research piece. This is the understanding contextually of customers and human behavior. And that's what I love so much about a good design methodology is it starts with that contextual inquiry, not pulling apart the pieces, but seeing how everything connects and seeing what the environment is. I mean, I work with clients where I'm able to actually go on, for example, like, tech ride-alongs. So I actually see the service being delivered in the customer's house and be able to ask questions in the moment. It's invaluable. And like you said, it allows you to get at that thick data, if you will, the contextual stuff that allows you to see, oh, I see why she did what she did. It was because this, that, and the other thing, which you can't get through a survey or just plain data. So it's a fantastic way to go. And again, just getting back to the whole thing, the zoos are great, but only for a only for a moment. You have to be on the savanna if you're going to see the context.
Right. It's great. So let's go to the fourth one, which is called Creativity and Not Manufacturing. All right, so the author talks about three types of reasoning here. Stay with us because I know we're doing a lot of intellectual stuff today, but there's deductive reasoning, right, which is top-down, right? So we get the big picture, and then we try to test a hypothesis in the specifics. Inductive reasoning is the opposite. We start with the specifics and end up with the general picture or the theory, if you will, behind it. But those two are not the same as abductive reasoning or nonlinear problem solving. You may remember that complex environments always are nonlinear in nature, which is capable of generating new ideas. He defined this type of reasoning as a kind of an educated guess appropriate after observing phenomenon. I'll give you an example. We used to do these detective puzzles when we were growing up, right? And so my dad would say something like, well, there was a guy and he was dead. And the only clue they had is there were 21 bicycles in the 51 bicycles in the alleyway. And then you have to ask questions, but it's that kind of reasoning of putting all the picture together, as opposed to either deductive or inductive.
Right. And to me, again, kind of going back to design, this is the kind of reasoning used in design thinking, mm-hmm. which is a popular term, but the process of it or the methodology of design thinking is it uses abductive reasoning. And It's because it's so good at being able to use partial or incomplete data like we almost always have, right? And being able to see contextually how these things come together. And again, I also think it's the only one of that list of three, Dave, that really does a good job of looking forward, whereas deductive reasoning and inductive reasoning really work on the past. Abductive is really great at moving you into the future.
That's great. So let's look at number five really quickly. It's called the North Star versus GPS. When you think about using GPS, notice that it tees up for you just step one, step two, step three, step four from algorithms about where you're going. But if you've ever actually used GPS, you know that it might be dead wrong. I had GPS lead me to a cornfield one day when I was in Iowa, for example. Or you know because North Star means you kind of know the lay of the land somewhere. In this case, they're talking about navigation on the water where you're able to use the stars to get a sense of the overall position you're in rather than the specific moves that you're doing, right? And that many times happens in cars when you're driving, thinking that's not the shortest way. I'm going to go this way, even though GPS tells me to go that way, right? And et cetera, a long way. Well, it's the same in business. I don't want just a step one, step two that's cranked out from all of the algorithmic data. I want to know the sense of the whole, which is what North Star is about. So he kind of puts it this way. Two essentials here. In sense making, you've got to, it helps you select an appropriate context for all this data. So in other words, if I know the city of Minneapolis, then any data points I'm given about it, it's the context from which those data points make sense, right? Same in business. I'm going to get all these data points, but do I understand the context of the overall market and its culture and history, et cetera? That's the first thing. The second thing is sense making helps us collect, have a perspective on how does the data fit together? So I got all these data points, but what's the whole? And this kind of reasoning, this kind of drama, data is really about interpreting what this means in its context and why people are doing it, et cetera.
You know, as we kind of start to close this show, Dave, one of the things that I want to point out to our listeners is that you might have got the feeling that we were starting to bash data a little bit and bash the empiricism that I think we actually, you and I both really love. And our past shows actually talked a lot about that. If you missed those shows, check out our podcast. But really, this is all about what I think is a false dilemma. One is that either you can make it through the way of the world by human judgment alone, or you can use artificial intelligence, right? Machine learning stuff and data and algorithms, et cetera. We're saying that it's a false dilemma. There's a middle road that actually is a synthesis of both of those.
Yes.
Data is fantastic, but you also need human judgment, creativity, and contextualization of that data to make sense of it and to, you know, ultimately have courage to go into the future. And that's what, you know, this show is all about.
You bet. Yeah. And so let's put it in the master image of the human body, okay? We have ears and mouths and et cetera and eyes, and we see all those things, and that's all the data that we can bring in that's, you know, processable and let make logic change, both inductive and deductive in nature, right? But we also have, as human beings, imagination, right? We also have empathy. We also have intuition available to us, right? All of those things. And that's why only the image of the human body puts all of that together, where all of that comes into decision making. A machine will never, it'll never care. And, you know, and it will never intuit. And it doesn't really imagine, right? So anyway, you've been listening to Working with Purpose with David Stark and Justin Royer. You can listen to these podcasts on davidstarkcollective.com or download them on iTunes. Next week, we're going to be looking at all of this put together, and we're going to show you kind of a way of how do I use all these inputs in terms of adaptability in our organizations. We hope you stay with us. We'd also love for you to join us on LinkedIn at Business Connected. We'd love to have more people there. For Justin and I, thank you for listening today.